Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
The past 36 hours, the United States and its partners have launched Operation Epic Fury, one of the largest, most complex, most overwhelming military offensives the world has ever seen. Nobody's seen anything like it.
Yeah, the news is pretty well defined by one set of facts right now, that we are at war with Iran. I don't know what else you want to call it. I thought it was hilarious that Kristen Welker's big question on Saturday when she was, or on Sunday when she was interviewing, who was it, Ted Cruz? I forget now who it was that she led with that question. She thought, I've got the big question of the day. What's the big question of the day? Oh, yeah, it was with Lindsey Graham. Here we go.
Senator, let me start with the big question. Yeah. Is the United States at war with Iran?
That's the big question, huh? Just, I mean, his answer, by the way, was fantastic. I always wonder, when you're one of, you know, like Lindsey Graham, he's done a billion interviews, right? Ted Cruz, you know, Marco Rubio, Tom Cotton, you know, these folks are on. When somebody asks you an incredibly stupid question, the ability to just, here comes my answer. I'm always amazed by that. Because I'd be the one, I'd be laughing at him. If you get me on Sunday morning to talk about the war with Iran, and you say, your big question, are we at war with Iran? Listen to his answer, though. It's great.
Senator, let me start with the big question. Yeah. Is the United States at war with Iran?
Mm-hmm. I think the Ayatollah would say, yeah.
I mean, I hate to laugh at, like, war and death and an assassination of a world leader who absolutely deserved it, but what else can you say? I mean, yes? I mean, it's just, anyway, it's such a nutty question. So, anyway, back to, not to pick on Kristen Welker, poor kid, promoted way over her capability. It's not her fault. She's in a job that she's not up to the task. I mean, it's been that way for years. Of all of the, you know, Sunday morning shows, Kristen is the least capable. That is an accomplishment of sorts. Anyway, back to the actual speech from the president yesterday. This is not the first speech on Saturday, or video, I guess you'd have to say, on Saturday, because I'm pretty sure that was stitched together. When I was watching it, it seemed like there were two or three different edits, which is fine. It's not a speech that he delivered to a group of people. He, you know, recorded it from a prepared statement, which is, I think, completely appropriate for President Trump to do. Also, the second video that he did yesterday, the 6-minute video, same thing. This is all pre-scripted in front of a screen without, you know, he's not taking questions at this point. I think the Pentagon is scheduled to do a Q&A this morning at, I think, 7 o'clock our time. We'll see if we have the ability to carry that live. We'll do so, obviously, if we can, because I think you'll get a lot more information about the actual campaign during that. But, of course, President Trump yesterday during the 6-minute video.
We have hit hundreds of targets in Iran, including Revolutionary Guard facilities, Iranian air defense systems. Just now it was announced that we knocked out 9 ships plus their naval building, all in a matter of literally minutes.
Now, it's interesting because CENTCOM, Central Command, U.S. Central Command, based in at MacDill Air Force Base here in Florida, has been very active on social media about publicizing information and also about telling us what they're doing, dispelling false allegations. Even, you know, there was a post that they said, during the U.N. Security Council meeting, the Iranian ambassador to the United States stated their response has been directly and solely, exclusively at bases and assets in the United States. False. We all know that's false. They are actively targeting civilians and have attacked more than a dozen locations. Dubai Airport, Kuwait, Zayed in Dubai, Erbil, Fairmont Palm Hotel in Dubai, the Burj Al Arab Hotel, the Crown Plaza Hotel in Bahrain, the Port of Dubai, residential areas in Bet Shemesh, Israel, Tel Aviv, Aeroviews Tower in Bahrain, and residential areas in Qatar. And that's, I like that they're doing this. They're putting out good information to counter the bad information. The Iranians claim that they had attacked and successfully struck the USS Abraham Lincoln. And the response from U.S. CENTCOM is, nope, the missiles launched didn't even come close. The Lincoln continues to launch aircraft in support of CENTCOM's relentless campaign to defend the American people by eliminating threats from the Iraqi or the Iranian regime. So, you know, like I said, it's good that the administration, it's not a surprise this administration would be active on social media, but particularly CENTCOM, that they're putting out information all the time. So that's good to know. But back to, you know, what has actually been accomplished. Again, we are using a massive array of various kinds of weapons. We have, you know, they posted that they had taken out at least one Jamarian-class Corvette. The president, of course, said that they had taken out eight others, so nine in total. The level of military weaponry that's being used in this is across the board. It's F-22s, it's F-35s, it's, gosh, it's A-10 Thunderbolts, you know, they say are involved in this. Look at how useful those tank killers can be. one of the wildest weapons ever made. I mean, they built a gun and then they built a plane to carry the gun, which is, you know, amazing. Anyway, so we're using everything we've got. And the number of ships in the region is immense, you know, two aircraft carrier groups and a lot of other things as well. So it's not a surprise that we made, you know, tremendous variety of strikes. The big news from Sunday was that the BBC got it wrong on Saturday. You can't really blame them for getting it wrong. It's not their fault. Everybody reports what they're able to do. And in real time, you know, people get things mistaken. But I was watching on Saturday. I think this was like Saturday morning, maybe around 11 o'clock. And, you know, they made the announcement that they were waiting for a speech to come. And it was going to be Ali Khamenei was going to be, you know, speaking. And, of course, he was already dead at that point. But it was just kind of funny to hear the commentator say, well, therefore, we know that the Israelis were wrong. Well, you know, maybe not exactly. So the president yesterday, you know, goes on talking about the various forms of damage that had been done.
Iran's formerly supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, is dead. This wretched and vile man had the blood of hundreds and even thousands of Americans on his hands and was responsible for the slaughter of countless thousands of innocent people all across many countries. Last night, all over Iran, the voices of the Iranian people could be heard cheering and celebrating in the streets when his death was announced.
And yes, that's all correct. And in fact, one of the things, you know, we talked about this extensively on Saturday. I don't know if you happen to listen. I have to assume that most of you didn't, just because it was an unusual time for the Pensacola Morning News. It was 10:30 on Saturday morning, and I came in for an hour, and, you know, I shared it on social media. But I have to assume that, you know, most of you did not hear that broadcast. And so I'm going to do my best today to, you know, over the course of the show, kind of explain what's going on as if I hadn't done that one. John, would you agree that's probably the right approach? Just because,
yes.
You know, you can't assume anything
that.
Like
yeah.
that. So the natural question that you should ask in this situation, in any situation where there's military action, is whether it's justified or not. And that goes to the question of just war theory. I used to actually teach this in the ethics classes, and I learned all of this stuff under a very, prominent theorist of just war theory, a guy named Jeff McMahon, back when I was at the University of Illinois. And these are the questions that you ask, because the war itself has to be just, which is the jus ad bellum is the Latin for that. The warfare has to be just, which is the jus in bello, that's the justice in the warfare fighting. And there's also the afterwards, the jus post bellum, which is the justice after the war. But there are basic questions that you have to ask. For example, in the justice of the war, is the war given for a justified reason such as self-defense against aggression or protecting innocent life? Now, this is obviously not a self-defense operation because Iran did not start it. But they started it for 40 years. You know, for ever since the fall of the Shah and the first 10 years under Ayatollah Khomeini, And then now under Ayatollah Khamenei. I know it's hard to keep straight if you're an American, but, you know, we've had him since 89, and it was Khamenei before, and it was Khamenei now. I know, but they're two different people, in case you were wondering. Yes, they are two different people. But they have been sponsoring terrorism, murdering Americans, as many as 1,000 or more, and actively engaging in hostilities. They are a threat to their neighbors. So Just Cause would have been any time along this spectrum to take him out and to take the regime out. That would have been justified at any point, whether it's Hamas, whether it's Hezbollah, whether it's activities, you know, in Yemen, okay, with the Houthis. Iran has been a massively destabilizing influence in the world, the region, and, of course, killing their own citizens, up to 30,000 of them in the most recent, protests/murders. So Just Cause, yes, check. Legitimate authority. Only authorized sovereign or recognized authorities can declare war. U.S., check. Now, the one question on that is, you know, does the United States have the authority to, of course we do under our Constitution, but also international war? You know, are we obligated to work through the U.N.? It's a fair question. Had we gotten to the, you know, gone through all the options, well, we'll get to that in a second. But, you know, it would have been better if we could have done it through a global coalition, because the more people who are on your side in international action, the better, the more justified the action is. The more unilateral it is, the less justified it is, typically. That doesn't mean it cannot be justified unilaterally, or in this case, bilaterally with Israel, but that is the question, okay? Is it with the right intention? Is it to establish peace? Is it to restore peace as opposed to being for conquest? Think Russia in Ukraine, or for revenge. Neither of those is the goal. We're not going after them only because they killed people in the past, but because, which, by the way, might well have justified it, but we're going against them out of their threat for the future. Is it the last resort? Did you try everything else you could before you took this action? Well, yeah, we've been trying for, since the 80s to stop this. And certainly in this case, we've been trying. And as you heard many times over the weekend, the efforts to bring this to a diplomatic resolution were simply not there. As Rick Scott told Fox News on Sunday.
I've talked to Secretary Rubio. The Iranian negotiators were stubborn. They were arrogant. They had no interest in giving up any of their weapons. They wanted to continue to enrich nuclear weapons. They wanted to continue to build missiles. They were building about 100 missiles a month. Mm. They've got an unbelievable stockpile. So yeah. The right things were happening. And I hope to God that we're able to finish this and we end up with a country that could be an ally.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. That would be the goal. But yeah, the negotiators were unwilling. They had unfair criteria. They were stalling, just like they have been stalling for decades. Okay, this is not a surprise. It's just the most recent version of it. Do we have a reasonable expectation of success? You know, because always in warfare, if you can't reasonably succeed, then killing people isn't justified. You're just thrashing and lashing out, which is what the Iranians are doing. They don't have a reasonable expectation of success. They are thrashing and lashing out against anybody who, you know, against hotels, right? I mean, to some degree, against air bases. Of course, we got our people largely out of Bahrain, out of the 5th Fleet headquarters, and moved them back onto the aircraft carriers, back to the water where they were safe. And that's why those bombs destroying buildings in those areas were not a threat, particularly to personnel. That's good. I mean, it's not good to have things be destroyed, but, you know, haha, you missed. You know, like, that's good, right? That's well-designed military response by us to their expected response. So you have to reasonably expect you're going to win. Otherwise, you're just shedding blood for no purpose. And then finally, proportionality. You have to have the cost of the war itself has to be less than the good it's trying to accomplish or the bad it's trying to remedy. And by the way, if you want to think about this, for example, the Israeli war in Gaza. Now, it's hard to assess numerically because a lot of the reporting we have on that is from, you know, the people who cannot be trusted to give accurate responses. But if you say, you know, 1,000 people in Israel versus how many tens of thousands of people probably were killed in Gaza, that's not a proportional response. That's one of the problems with that war, is that it does not justify itself. The cost was so much greater. Well, they staged an incursion. It doesn't matter. I mean, it does matter, but that's not the whole question. You know, if one person comes in your house, you can't kill him and his family and his whole neighborhood. That's the idea. It has to be a proportional response. So I think we checkbox all of these depending on how the proportionality thing goes, and the prospect of success, of course. Then the warfare itself, okay, is the war itself being conducted properly? Are you discriminating, which is a good thing, distinguishing between combatants and non-combatants? Yes. Will there be mistakes? Yes. Will there be what's called collateral damage or civilian casualty? Yes, there already have been. You know, we think the school, which is terrible. But in war, that will happen. The question is always back to whether the overall value of the war is enough to justify those kinds of mistakes, where we're trying not to make them. And again, keep that in mind. We try not to make them. They try to make them. We try to kill only military things. They try to kill civilians. With the way we are waging the war is just. The way they are waging the war is unjust and evil. Proportional, again, what you're trying to accomplish has to be proportional to what you're doing, and actions must be justified on military necessity. And then afterwards, there's some things as well. But that, yeah, so I think this, I said it on Saturday, and I'll say it again. Ethically, this war is completely justified. Legally, I think it's also justified. Certainly, the president is acting within his constitutional authority. He has 48 hours to notify Congress of any military action, up to 60 days. If they do not vote to extend an authorization for the use of military force, he can stay. If they vote him down, he has to withdraw. Some are saying that it's not a response to a direct attack, therefore it's not justified. No, I don't think you have to wait for them to attack, and they have already attacked and killed at least 1,000 Americans over the years, going back to the Beirut bombing, the coal, them or indirectly. So I think it is a justified war. The only real question is two things. Is it practically got a good chance of succeeding, what we're trying to do, which is to basically clear the deck for a revolution? I don't know. I guess if you push me, I probably think it's not likely to work, you know? But it's the best time to act ever because they don't have the support of Russia because they're too busy fighting their own war. The regime is weak as possible right now, and the revolution wants to happen as much as it can. So it's kind of a best chance scenario, plus the deserved death for Ali Khamenei and his leaders. So that's where we are. Just a way of thinking about it. You don't have to agree with me. Feel free not to. 437-1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Oh, how's that flu, babe? Did you take DayQuil Intense Flu yet?
Nah, I got this. Ugh, okay, I don't got this.
You stay on the couch, and I'll grab the DayQuil.
Undo your flu symptoms with DayQuil Intense Flu. DayQuil Intense Flu provides powerful relief of your flu symptoms.
I'm ready for that to-do list.
Wow, you do got this.
DayQuil Intense Flu, the daytime coughing, aching, fever, under your flu medicine. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
Did you know? Florida West Economic Development Alliance exists to deliver measurable results for Escambia County. Our focus is simple, growing local businesses and attracting new ones that create jobs, increase wages, and bring private investment to our community. Every project is evaluated on its ROI to taxpayers. Florida West works to ensure Escambia County remains competitive for high-value employers today and for decades to come. Learn more at FloridaWestEDA.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance tech at a university, he knows ordering from multiple suppliers takes time away from keeping their arena up and running. That's why he counts on Grainger to get everything he needs, from lighting and HVAC parts to plumbing supplies, all in one place. And with fast, dependable delivery, he's stocked and ready for the next tip-off. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This isn't shouting.
It's conversation.
Hugh Hewitt, weekdays at 2 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Good morning, 528 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. 437-1620 is my phone number if you want to weigh in on any of the stuff related to what's going on in Iran. And I know a lot of people are asking, you know, a lot of questions. I'll just say the one thing that I have found not surprising, but probably the most disappointing thing over the weekend is basically, the people who hate Trump are posting about how this is stupid and evil and a distraction from the Epstein files. It's a wag the dog, and they're giving their predictable answer. And the people who love Trump are saying this is the bestest, smartest thing ever. both of you need to be smarter. I mean, both of you need to be better. There are elements of this that are concerning. For instance, the president campaigned on not getting involved in wars and not starting wars and not being, you know, a regime changer and, you know, getting us out of foreign entanglements. And here he's gotten us into one that was pretty quickly, semi-quickly resolved with Venezuela, although we still are shooting, you know, boats out of the water in, you know, that area of the world. And then in Iran, you know, he's gotten us involved in clearly a war there, although no troops, and I would not expect there to be. There's no political will for that, and there's, you know, certainly no expectation for that. There's nobody saying that. You know, so that's true. The president is definitely acting in a way that is different from what you would have expected him to based on what he has said before and even some of his, you know, kind of mocking things about this in the past. So, you know, there's enough criticism to go around on this. But the idea that, you know, this isn't a justified war, this would have been justified to do at any time in the last 40 years, 37 years. It's not that it wasn't ever appropriate. It's that it was never prudent. And you could argue it's not prudent even now. But Khamenei deserved to die for years. Taking him out is justified ethically.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm CJ Papa Smoke. A scene in the compound of the U.S. Embassy in Kuwait as the fighting rages in the Middle East.
U.S. Air Force F-15 Strike Eagle was shot down from what appeared to be a case of friendly fire. The Kuwaiti Defense Ministry says multiple U.S. aircraft were shot down. There are no reports of casualties at this time. Both the pilot and weapons systems officer, the backseater, and one of the jets appeared in a cell phone video after parachuting to the ground.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson reporting from Istanbul, Turkey. A warning earlier and people scrambling Israel's second largest city.
These sirens indicate that the missiles are inbound at this moment, sending the population here, around 300,000 people just in Tel Aviv alone, into bomb shelters.
Fox's Trey Yanks, Pentagon press conference, and Secretary of War Pete Hegseth and Joint Chiefs Chairman General Dan Kane set for 8 a.m. Eastern. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. We've got 52 degrees right now. Clear skies here in Pensacola. We'll get to our full forecast with meteorologist Brooke Richardson from Channel 3. And we've got that in just a few minutes. Well, an Escambia County man's 21st arrest is raising questions about the cycle of reoffending. 36-year-old Aris Rutledge back in jail 11 days after his last release, this time for an alleged lewd act near a school bus stop in front of a child and her mother. Reentry Alliance Pensacola says mental health treatment is key to breaking the reoffending cycle. Executive Director Vinnie Wibbs tells Channel 3 that county jails often lack resources needed to provide adequate care. The Escambia Jail says a psychiatrist and licensed social workers are available for inmates, but mental health visits do require a fee. Now, the major bridge project in Baldwin County, getting closer to the finish line, the new $52 million intracoastal waterway bridge along the Foley Beach Express is expected to open by this summer. When it does, it'll double the number of travel lanes across the water. Traffic on the Beach Express has already surged since tolls were removed back in May of 2024, with an estimated 6,000 to 8,000 additional vehicles using the route every day. Officials say that project will strengthen the evacuation routes for coastal Alabama as well. A Miami man is headed to federal prison for nearly 5 years after being convicted of large-scale identity theft. 33-year-old Mackenzie Monastrini was sentenced on Friday to 55 months behind bars. FBI agents say that they found evidence inside of a padlocked room at his home in 2020, which included 450 stolen accounts, fake IDs, credit cards, and other people's names. Authorities estimate victims lost between $250,000 and $550,000. Monastini pleaded guilty in December. Well, a drainage project in Santa Rosa County is back on track after an unexpected delay. Workers discovered gopher tortoises at the Pine Blossom Road construction site, which halted the $5 million project for several months. The county spent more than $46,000 relocating the tortoises. Wildlife experts say the reptiles are a state-threatened species and commonly found in northwest Florida's sandy soil. The project's completion date has been pushed back until early August. It's 5:34 here at News Radio 92.3. Clear skies right now. It's 52 degrees. And let's get a check on our forecast with Brooke Richardson.
We are going- going to be seeing temperatures warming up as you head into your afternoon. High near 72 degrees, mostly sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 60 degrees. For Tuesday, mostly sunny skies, high near 72. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping back near 62 degrees. Going into Wednesday, mostly sunny skies, temperatures back in the 70s for highs, and overnight Wednesday, dropping near 61. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke, and we've got 52 degrees right now in Pensacola, 53 in Gulf Breeze, and the cool spot this morning, 47 in Milton. Your next news at 6, breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Some type of an issue with your money now. We'll try to get that update for you next hour.
Join Kenny Chartel from Affordable Automotive Gulf Breeze for car care tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Kenny will be sharing his years of expertise on car maintenance, as well as tips and loads of great advice that'll keep your car running in top shape. Whether foreign or domestic, don't miss car care tomorrow at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Raise your glass as Wine on the Water, the Grand Tasting, returns to Wahoo Stadium on Saturday, March 7th. Enjoy fine wines, craft beers, and gourmet bites from Pensacola's top chefs, all set against the stunning backdrop of Pensacola Bay. Don't miss live entertainment and a croquet and rosé tournament, plus breathtaking sailing. Get your tickets now at givesacredheart.org. That's givesacredheart.org.
Hello, this is Ricky Stewart, licensed independent agent serving my Medicare clients here in Pensacola.
Hey, I'm Jonathan Cook, owner of Jonathan's Construction and Flooring.
What do these businesses have in common? They've trusted our years of marketing experience at ADX Communications.
I love supporting your radio station because you guys care about this community. You know what you're doing. You're detail-oriented, and your shows are wonderful. You guys have the best listeners in the world, and I love getting clients from your show. Thanks.
I enjoy working with the great team at this radio station. Dependable, professional, local, and result-driven.
To have your business become part of our success story, no matter if it's Cat Country 98.7, News Radio 92.3, Sports Radio Pensacola 99.1, Pensacola's Playlist 94.5, or the area's most robust digital platform, call us today, 850-262-6000. That's 850-262-6000. And let ADX go to work for you.
You don't always have time to sit and listen.
That's why Pensacola Right Now works the way it does.
Every few minutes, you get the latest local news, traffic on the fives, weather, and updates you actually need. So whether you're in the car for 5 minutes or 50, you're always caught up. Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin.
Weekdays 4 to 7.
On News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Members, we're going to take a pause in the action. The budget chair is going to update us on the status of his report. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Looks like we're not going to conference this weekend. I intend to go home tomorrow, and we will see you next week.
Thank you for that report.
This was killing me yesterday when I was listening to the rest of the House floor debate, all 11 hours of it, good Lord, from Wednesday. But as you hear them, they sounded, it reminded me of in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, you know, when, and there was much rejoicing. That's what it sounded. It was like satirical cheering. And so what does that mean exactly? Joining us now, we have Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2 in his last session. Budget not conferencing this weekend between the House and the Senate. Alex, welcome back to the show. What does that mean?
Hey, good morning, Andrew. So what that means
simply is that the House and Senate have not agreed on the amount of revenue we're going to take in next year, meaning our tax package, right? So we have to agree on the revenue, the net revenue we're going to collect next year. And then we also have to agree on the top line dollar amounts, essentially like for the overall budget and per silo. So like for me and my Senate counterpart, Jay Trumbull, to negotiate a healthcare budget, we have to know, are we working with, you know, $53 billion, $56 billion? And so those numbers have to be agreed to before we can get into the nitty-gritty detail of, like, negotiating every line. So really all that meant was that we haven't finalized those things, but we also, you know, we have time. If we had started conferencing this week, it would have been considered early. So it's not necessarily out of the order, out of the ordinary to not have begun conferencing this weekend. What is somewhat out of the ordinary is that there's a sense that we can't even agree on top line numbers yet. Mm. That feels a little bit out of the ordinary.
Within silos, I mean, obviously, if the big number doesn't match, the little numbers aren't going to match either. But is it sort of all the silos, one or two of the silos? Where's the discrepancy, or do you even know?
I think that there's no one place where there's a discrepancy, right?
Okay.
So, I mean, maybe there is in negotiations between the Speaker and the President, but, you know, it's normally it's all in flux until they can agree on everything.
Okay.
You know, it's a complete back and forth, offer back, so... I don't know if there's a revenue holdup on our tax package or what.
You know, I guess you and I maybe had never talked about this exactly, or never occurred to me, but let's say you and Jay Trumbull in the, you know, healthcare silo, you come back with a number of $55 billion, you have 54 and he has 56, okay? Well, then you have projects within that. You have to negotiate the details, right? Because the sum total of the details is what matters. How do you do that? That seems like a very complicated task, because I'm assuming that some of your priorities match up, A, B, C, and some of your priorities do not match up, and which things do and don't get, and which get how much funding. That just sounds like a very complicated. I know it happens every year, but as I'm thinking about this, it just seems like a very difficult thing to accomplish, not just for you, but for any of those silos.
Well, it is complicated, right? Because there's some things that, you know, the appropriations chair or the speaker may care very much about in my budget that I can't really give much on. And there's some things that the Senate president and the Senate appropriations chair care about. And then there's everything else, right? So as a subcommittee chair overseeing this one specific budget, it's my job just to be informed about it as much as I possibly can in healthcare about every line, to be able to advocate and give everyone around me confidence that the product that we'll have is the best possible and is backed up by the most justification. So, we do it every year. We have assistance from, staff members who are brilliant with a ton of institutional knowledge. It's a complex negotiation.
One of the other things, you know, you guys did a lot on the floor this week. One of the things I think was the voter eligibility package, changing so that only what state issued IDs are legitimate. For example, like student IDs would not qualify for voter citizenship validation. Is that right?
Yes. So it's essentially like the state's version of the SAVE Act if Congress isn't going to be passing it.
Then we're going to do it here at the state level. Okay, very good. You also passed the Guardian bill. We were talking about that earlier, and we'll come back to that next hour. Michelle Salzman's bill to basically take the K-12 Guardian program and expand it to post-secondary while also allowing teachers, or what you would call professors, adjuncts, TAs, to become guardians and carry in the classroom if they go through all the things. So that's a pretty dramatic change. I thought that was funny the way the Democrats raised all their objections, and then you guys basically didn't debate, just voted on it. Said, okay, we don't care. We're doing it.
It passed. It's moving. We'll see what the Senate does.
Does the Senate even have this on their agenda? Because I know you guys have been trying. The House has always been more permissive about guns, and the Senate's always been the one that waffled on this stuff. So do you expect this to go anywhere in the Senate, or where is it? I haven't checked.
I don't know. I can double check really quickly to see if it has.
I'll look up while we're talking about other things. That's fine. We'll see what we can figure out. As I know, we are both furiously checking our lines. We have CS for CS for Senate 896 has been heard one time by the Appropriations Committee, and that's all the actions that I can find. So slow if no movement in the Senate, which means probably it's not going anywhere, unfortunately. Okay, fair enough. Is that what you found, Alex? I know you're faster than I am.
Well, I actually see that it's been heard in two committees.
Oh, all right.
So we'll see. So the House bill, once it got sent over in messages, it was immediately referred to rules. I don't know if that referral will stick. If it does, then it probably can't be picked up on the Senate floor immediately. And I don't know if rules is meeting again. But I could not tell you. You'd have to ask either, I guess you'd have to ask Senator Gates or Representative Salzman on if that rules referral is going to stick.
Fair enough. I appreciate that. Some of the other things going on this week, you had kind of a fun week. you got the, it's not titled this, but I'll call it the James Uthmeyer Rebuke Bill, passed unanimously. That's the one that, had it been in place at the time, would have made the $10 million side shuffle of money to Hope Florida Foundation from Centene instead of to ACA for the purposes of political action campaigning, would have made that illegal. Pretty interesting that it got unanimous support.
I'll be the first to tell you, I think that our current criminal statutes on things like organized schemes to defraud and money laundering already applied to the circumstances. But at least this would definitively say, if you take money off the top, if you shave money off of a state settlement, money owed to the state, and divert it, you are committing a crime against the state. So you don't have to go through all the machinations that James and his friends have gone through saying, oh, well, this was justified for X or X or X, or arguing about whether or not it was or wasn't Medicaid money. You can't take money off the top from money owed to the state. Sorry. You know, every person in Florida would understand, like, employees of a corporation can't take money owed to that corporation without telling the corporation. You know what I mean? It's a pretty simple premise, but at least this would spell out that in this circumstance, it doesn't matter any other criminal statute, this in and of itself, just doing that, regardless of where the money goes, would be criminal.
And you also had a portion of that bill. There were two elements of it. One was prohibiting the transfer, but also second, 10-day mandatory reporting of any payments to come so that you, as the government oversight, the corporation, as you say, is actually informed of the money coming. And again, those are very obvious things. But just to clarify, over-clarify almost, that this is what's going to happen. Is that bill running in the Senate? Are we going to see a companion in the Senate?
No, I'm looking to see if there's any, because the language was never even filed, like that portion of the bill, the rest of my bill related to ethics and conduct and fundraising from your official position was filed, but the portion about James and what he did, it is not in any Senate bill. So essentially that means, based on our rules of procedure, that it could be in play on another bill. So we'll see if I can work it on somewhere, but the Senate has been very clear that they don't want to do anything at all to even remotely offend the governor or the executive. And unfortunately, that means that they're comfortable not knowing if James is engaging in statewide settlements right now and taking money out of them.
You know, speaking of that, just as a note, we found out yesterday that, you know, because the grand jury that had been impaneled related to all of this has been meeting and we hadn't heard anything. There was reporting yesterday that there has been a presentment that the grand jury has issued something, but it's being held from the public because there's a legal challenge to it, apparently. And literally at this time, that's all we know. We don't know who, we don't know what, we can't really talk about it because we don't know anything. But just kind of, you know, we're all waiting to find out, you know, what is this going to really mean for the future? One of the other bills that you kind of, I thought you raised a good question about was about the counterterrorism, counterintelligence bill and the breadth of language in that bill, which would seem to indicate that anybody who is politically adverse to the state, whatever that means, might potentially be surveilled for the purpose of finding pretext to arrest them. Other elements of that bill to prevent terrorism make perfect sense to me, but that part of the language you objected to, you were the only Republican to vote against it. Do you have confidence that the language will be changed in the amendment that they said is forthcoming?
I could not tell you if the bill is going to move past that committee, Andrew. What I can say is that it caused me a lot of concern, not just the definition of who could be targeted, because the definition was so extremely broad that it would involve, anybody with a viewer opinion that, say, James Uthmeyer subjectively believed was, against the state.
Right.
So you could deem my opinion that voters should decide on ballot amendments without interference with some state resources. You could deem that inimical to the state and then put a task force on me to surveil me without any warrant or legal justification. And that was a pretty serious concern.
Even your opposition to this bill under this bill would seem to include your opposition as a pretext for surveillance because, the state's trying to accomplish a thing and there you are standing in the way of it, right? How dare you?
Right. There's the two components, like the activity permitted is very vague and broad. Like in addition to making arrests, which is in there, it also said reveal their intent to compel a response using counterintelligence methods and tradecraft. I could not get a definition of what that meant. What it seems to mean is we can, lie to you. We can dress up as fake telephone operators and spook you. I have no idea what that contemplates, right? And I don't think anybody else does either. So just because it's so broad and encompasses everything and would allow for some aggressive abuses, based on people's, right now, at least based on people's opinions and viewpoint, I could not vote for it.
Finally, you did have a moment. You're in your last term. Obviously, you're going to be giving a speech on the floor here pretty soon. You had a human breakdown moment at the very end of your last budget subcommittee hearing. I want to listen to it for a second.
So I know I only have a few more weeks here before I term out, but hopefully you guys can continue to build on that and do a better job than I could have in the last few years. And I'm excited to see what everyone here achieves. So thank you.
So far, pretty safe. But
with that, unless anyone has anything to say, this concludes our subcommittee agenda. And Representative Renato moves her eyes.
Now, I said yesterday, I thought this was adorable and very human, and I loved it. But now I think back, was that because there were so many protesters in the meeting?
So many protesters, Andrew. So many protesters.
I know the Attorney General and his folks, or at least his folks, whether he was involved or not, they went out of their way to get protesters at your meeting on the basis of false allegations and then a prayer vigil they were going to have at their office. Was it all the protesters that made you so emotional?
No, thankfully, once everybody realized James was lying to them, no one even showed up to his prayer vigil he offered to hold at 3:30. But,
poor guy.
But as I was saying goodbye, I was looking at the staff and looking at the members of that committee. I mean, that committee, had to go through something that, no committee has really had to go through in the past 8 years. This committee was the group of representatives that, we all were part of that, those hearings last year where all this is uncovered. And so it's just a great group of representatives. Like, I'm extremely proud and appreciative of them. It's really easy for politicians to still glad hand and be buddy buddy with Uthmeyer and the other folks that are defending or trying to excuse the conduct. This group, they stood, they were loyal to the truth. They were faithful to the truth. They stuck by it, and they had my back. And that's not something I could say for every single House member, right? But
that's powerful. And you're right. I mean, you've been through the battle with some folks. Not everybody had your back. Some people really did. And I think thinking over that over the time that it's been, I can imagine why that was powerful. And again, I thought it was. We both, John and I both kind of celebrated them, and we thought that it was amazing. Alex Andrade, he is our state representative for District 2. Alex, as always, thank you for the time. We'll look forward to talking again next week.
Thanks, Andrew.
Absolutely. 5:53 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Whether you want to start your education or advance your career, Pensacola State College is the place for you. Join the 91% of PSC students who graduate loan-free and select from over 100 programs, ranging from career certificates to baccalaureate degrees. In addition, Pensacola State has over 300 scholarships to choose from, including cybersecurity. Register today for the summer semester. Go to pensacolastate.edu. That's pensacolastate.edu to learn more.
As the lead agency for our regional continuum of care, Opening Doors of Northwest Florida helps coordinate funding, data, and community planning to strengthen our local response to homelessness. Waterfront Rescue Mission is a community partner. As a recipient of HUD funding, they use those dollars to help support emergency shelter operations and provide critical services to individuals in need. Together, they work to strengthen housing stability across our community. Sponsored by Tel Staffing and HR, empowering you to get back to business.
Making the wrong choice can be very costly. Choosing the wrong plumbing company can cost you a lot of money. Hi, I'm Judy Lacey with Barbieri Plumbing, and we've been repairing Pensacola's plumbing problems for over 50 years. We are the local originator of the flat rate pricing system, so you don't have to pay by the hour, and there are no surprises. When you need a plumber, make the right choice and call Barbieri Plumbing. We will make your plumbing great again.
License number RF11067749.
Right now, somewhere close, your dream house is sitting there. Maybe it's got the perfect porch, a backyard made for barbecues, a kitchen built for big family meals, and it's just waiting for you to call it home. At Penair Credit Union, we make it easy to get there with great rates, flexible loans, and local lenders who know the market. Whether you're buying, building, or refinancing, we're here to help. So what are you waiting for? Learn more at penair.org/homeloans. Equal housing lender.
The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay, weekdays 5 to 9 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
Well, a guy dresses up like a bat clearly has issues.
I've got your picture. I'd like a million of your aura myself. I want a doctor to take a picture so I can look at you from inside as well. You got me turning up and turning down. I'm turning in, I'm turning right, I'm turning Japanese. I think I'm turning Japanese.
I really think so.
5:56 here on News Radio 92.3. Yeah, I just got to pick my moment, you know.
I'm not gonna I really think so.
That's what I was like. I'm just gonna underline that lyric right there. That's the one we're gonna go with. 437-1620. Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. Spence Golden Morning News. War with Iran. That's the story. That's the only story. That's the most important thing going on. And, you know, making sure that you understand it. There was a one-hour discussion I did about this just after President Trump had given his 8-minute video on Saturday. It's well worth listening to if you haven't had a chance to. Pretty comprehensive treatment. We'll try to give you some of that as well. But, of course, over the weekend, you know, there was all kinds of information related to this. You know, even Jimmy Petronis spoke with us actually just after I had gotten done with that one-hour session on Saturday. He, you know, talking about what's going on in Iran.
The president has minced no words. There's been plenty of outreach on behalf of the United States to Iran. It is destabilizing the region. There's no way they can be allowed to contain or hold on to a nuclear weapon. As we saw that in the State of the Union address, how has he brought it up? There's been lots of very public telegraphing of the president's intentions.
Yeah, I mean, that's clear. I'll be honest. I didn't actually think we were going to launch an attack. Or I should say, it's not that I thought we wouldn't. It's that I really wasn't expecting it. I just because President Trump has been not the, you know, expansive war utilizer. He's been against war, and he's bragged about being against war and ending wars, not starting wars. And so, honestly, I thought that it was all leverage for the negotiations. Well, you know, hey, you get things wrong. Sometimes you get things wrong. But, you know, as I have explained at length before and will continue to do so this morning, I do think this is a justified war. That doesn't make it a smart war. I think it's justified, and then practically I think it's a good bet. I think it's a good bet. And, you know, some people are saying, well, you know, what if the regime that replaces, if, and that is a big if, the people are able to replace their regime and get new leaders, what if that regime is even worse? Well, it's possible. Then again, how much worse could it be, really? You know, you know, it's hard to imagine how much worse it could be, since it was already trying to get a nuclear weapon, would have been willing to use it, already killing its own people, already sponsoring international terror. And, you know, you might say, well, you know, Iraq after Saddam, you know, ISIS was worse. Okay. You know, true. But I would say Ali Khamenei was worse than Saddam Hussein, which is, I mean, that's a, that is a hard bar to beat. But it's true. Saddam Hussein was mostly terrible towards his own people. You know, he had that one thing in Kuwait. But, you know, mostly he was terrible to his own people. Iran has been exporting terrorism for decades and supporting it and endorsing it and even engaging in it and attacking us. And so, you know, dictator in Iraq, bad. Dictator slash terror leader, terror networks, anti-Jewish, anti-American, killing lots of people. Even worse. You know, how much worse could it be? Well, again, it's kind of hard to imagine it being a whole lot worse than it has been. But we'll talk about it throughout the morning.